If you've been following the mental health space for any length of time, you've probably noticed a pretty frustrating ceiling.
Yeah, that ceiling is very real.
Right, because we have more therapy and more apps and just generally more awareness than ever before. But the prevailing model for dealing with our past, whether that's acute trauma or just those, deep-seated neurotic loops, it basically boils down to one word, which is management.
Exactly. It's the coping model.
Right.
The whole idea is that the damage is already done. Your neural wiring is set in stone. And so the very best you can hope for is to build this really robust set of skills to handle the symptoms when they inevitably flare up.
Yeah, it's like having a pebble in your shoe, and instead of just taking it out, you spend years learning to walk differently so it doesn't hurt quite as much.
Oh, that's a perfect analogy.
You just get better at limping.
Better at limping, but you never actually stop limping. And I think that's exactly where our source material for this deep dive really throws a wrench in the gears. Because today we're looking at the work of Clint Matheny. He's a veteran therapist with over 40 years of practice, and he argues that this whole management mindset isn't just pessimistic, it's actually biologically outdated.
Yeah, and he's talking about a concept called memory reconsolidation.
Right.
I really want to be clear up front for anyone listening. This is not some niche new age theory. This is based on a fundamental shift in our understanding of neuroscience that happened right around the turn of the millennium.
It's hard science.
Exactly.
Ugh.
The claim here is super bold. It's that the brain is not a read-only device. You can actually unsave the emotional file, get at the data, and re-save it without the pain.
Right. It's a shift from coping to curing. That is the core distinction Matheny is making.
Curing, which is a word you almost never hear in therapy.
Never. But Matheny calls this the biggest psychotherapy breakthrough of the 21st century. And honestly, when you look at the biological mechanism behind it, it is really hard to argue with him.
So let's get into the weeds here, because I think to understand the breakthrough, we have to look at the old rule. For decades, the consensus in psychology was that once a long-term memory is formed, once it's consolidated, it is permanent.
It's physically etched into the neural structure of your brain.
Right. Like concrete.
Exactly. The old dogma was that memory is wet concrete when you first experience the event, but once it dries, it is set forever. So if you have a traumatic memory, that neural pathway is hardened. And the very best that the old way of therapy could do was something called extinction learning.
Extinction learning. Let's pause on that term, because I really think this explains why so many of you listening might feel totally stuck in therapy.
Yeah.
What is actually happening in the brain during extinction learning?
Well, think of it as a competition.
Focus.
Say you have an original memory that says dogs are dangerous. In traditional exposure therapy, you might expose yourself to a friendly dog over and over, but you don't actually erase the dogs are dangerous memory.
You're just stacking something on top of it.
Exactly. You create a completely new secondary memory right next to the old one that says this specific dog is safe.
So now your brain has two completely contradictory files fighting for dominance.
Precisely. And guess which one the brain defaults to when you're tired or stressed?
The danger file.
Always the danger file, because it's tied to survival. So you are constantly having to use cognitive energy, your willpower, your coping skills, breathing techniques to suppress the old memory and amplify the new one.
Which is exhausting.
It is exhausting. That is exactly why managing trauma feels like a full-time job. You're basically refereeing a wrestling match inside your own head forever.
Wow. Okay. Which brings us to the actual breakthrough. Matheny points to a massive shift that started intuitively in the clinic back in the 80s, but wasn't proven in a lab until 2002.
Yeah, it's a classic case of clinical practice being way ahead of the theoretical science. Matheny was working with clients back in 1984, and he noticed something really weird happening.
He didn't even have a name for it yet.
No name at all. But he saw that if a client was fully immersed in a traumatic memory, like visibly feeling the emotion in the room, and then something specific happened to interrupt or contradict that feeling, the memory didn't just get a competing safety logic added to it.
The actual emotional charge vanished.
Vanished completely. He was seeing clients who had been phobic or deeply traumatized for years, and suddenly they simply could not conjure up the fear anymore.
It wasn't covered up.
It was gone permanently. But, he didn't have the biological proof to explain why until Karim Nader's neuroscience team came along in 2002.
Yes, the Nader study. This is the smoking gun of memory reconsolidation.
It really is. Nader completely overturned that old concrete theory we talked about.
Right, the idea that memory is permanent.
Yeah, what his team discovered is that when you access a long-term memory, when you pull that old file off the hard drive and put it onto your active screen, it becomes biologically unstable. It enters what they call a window of lability.
Lability meaning it's susceptible to being changed.
Yes. For a brief period, roughly 4 to 5 hours after you really activate a memory, the literal protein synthesis that holds that memory together in the brain unlocks. It becomes fluid again.
That is wild. So every time I remember something vividly, I am not just playing back a recorded video.
Yeah.
I am physically unlocking the neural circuit.
You are. And this is the critical part for healing. When that circuit is unlocked, it can be updated.
Okay.
If you just remember it and save it back the exact same way, it stays the same. But if you introduce new information while that window is open, specifically information that radically contradicts the old emotional prediction, you can rewrite the code before it locks down again.
And that is memory reconsolidation.
That is the edit butter.
Okay, this is where I think the nuance is so important for you listening. Because I can hear people right now thinking, well, wait a minute, I talk about my trauma all the time. I cry about it in my therapist's office. I relive it. So why isn't my brain rewriting it?
And that question highlights the absolute tragedy of a lot of traditional talk therapy. Because if you just open the window, meaning you relive the pain, you talk about all the terrible details, and then your 50-minute session ends, what have you actually done?
You've just reconsolidated the exact same painful memory.
Exactly. You opened the file, you looked at it, you felt terrible, and you hit save.
You might have even made it worse.
You absolutely might have strengthened the neural pathway by practicing the pain.
So just feeling it isn't enough. For the actual rewrite to happen, you need an extra ingredient. Matheny talks about this as the mismatch experience.
Yes, or the prediction error.
Right.
This is the actual mechanism of change. The brain is basically a giant prediction machine. The trauma memory says, if I'm in this situation, I will die. Or if I speak up in public, I will be totally humiliated. To unlock and rewrite that specific code, the brain needs to be in a state of activation, yes, but simultaneously experience a blatant violation of that exact expectation.
It needs to feel the fear, but at the exact same split second, register that the terrible thing is not happening.
Correct. And it's not enough to just cognitively think, oh, I am safe.
Like repeating affirmations.
Right. Affirmations don't work for this. You have to physically feel the visceral activation of the trauma. And while that specific neural circuit is firing, you introduce a sensory or emotional experience that creates a mismatch.
So the brain essentially goes, wait a minute. I am predicting severe danger, but my current sensory input says, I'm totally safe. This file must be corrupt.
Exactly. And because that window of lability is currently open, the brain automatically updates the file to match current reality. It updates to I am safe.
And once that update happens, once it reconsolidates, the old emotional tag is physically stripped away from the memory forever.
Forever. You still remember the event, obviously. You don't have amnesia.
Right.
You know what happened. But it just becomes historical facts. It's like remembering you went to the grocery store last week. There is zero adrenaline or fear attached to it.
Which totally explains why positive thinking or journaling usually fails to touch deep trauma.
Oh, absolutely. Positive thinking is trying to overwrite the data without actually opening the file first.
Right. You're just standing outside a locked vault yelling, I am confident.
Exactly. While the actual fear is locked safely inside the vault, reconsolidation kicks the door down, walks in, and rearranges the furniture.
I love that analogy. And I want to look at the scope of this because the word trauma can be super loaded.
It is.
We tend to immediately think of combat veterans or survivors of major assault. But Matheny makes it clear that this mechanism applies to a vastly wider range of human suffering.
Much wider. He prefers using the term deconditioning, which I think is a lot more helpful for the average person.
Deconditioning.
Yeah, because basically anything that your brain has learned, it can unlearn. So this includes phobias, panic attacks, general anxiety, but also those really deep shame-based identity schemas.
You mean those core scripts like, I'm not good enough, or I'm inherently unlovable.
Exactly. Those aren't personality traits. Those are just learned predictions.
Cool.
At some point in your history, you had experiences that taught your brain, being me equals rejection. That is just a memory circuit.
So it's a file.
It's just a file. And it can be opened, mismatched, and rewritten exactly the same way a severe car accident trauma can be.
So if I have a severe panic response to public speaking, I'm not broken. That's just a glitchy file.
It's a prediction error. Your amygdala is ringing the fire alarm based on deeply outdated data. If you can hit that rewrite window, you don't need to learn 10 different coping skills to get through a speech. You just literally stop being afraid of it.
The problem just ceases to exist.
It ceases to exist.
That permanence is the part that sounds like magic to people, but it's literally just biology. It's like you don't have to keep taking antibiotics after the infection is completely gone.
Right. Once it's cured, it's cured. Which naturally brings us to the toolkit.
All right, how do we actually do this? Because if the science has been totally clear since 2002, and the clinical intuition was there since the 80s, how are we applying it? Because you can't really just sit on your couch and easily will your brain into a perfect prediction error state.
Well, you could try, but it's highly ineffective and potentially re-traumatizing.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah.
So Matheny actually lists a whole spectrum of therapies in the source material that, intentionally or not, actively leverage this reconsolidation mechanism.
And it is a bit of an alphabet soup of
It
acronyms.
really is. Let's try to organize them for the listener. Looking at the list, it seems like they naturally fall into two main buckets. You have the ones that rely heavily on the body and sensory input, and then the ones that lean more on the mind and imagination.
That is a great way to group them. So, in that first bucket, the sensory or somatic approaches, you have things like EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
Right.
You also have brain spotting and the Havening technique.
Let's actually take EMDR as the primary example there, just because probably the most famous one. How does tracking a therapist's finger back and forth in front of your face trigger a deep biological rewrite?
It's fascinating because for a very long time, the industry didn't really know why it worked. They just knew it did.
Right.
But when you look at it through the lens of memory reconsolidation, it makes perfect sense. In EMDR, you are asked to hold the traumatic memory in your mind. So there is your activation, the window is open.
Okay.
And then while you're holding that fear, you have to track the therapist's finger moving rapidly side to side. That lateral eye movement requires a lot of cognitive bandwidth. It heavily taxes your working memory.
So you can't fully focus on the horror of the memory because part of your brain is strictly focused on following this movement in a safe room.
Exactly. It creates a biological glitch. It's a profound mismatch between the high arousal of the past trauma and the completely neutral, grounding sensory input of the present moment.
It literally forces the brain to realize, wait, I'm remembering extreme danger, but I'm currently just sitting in a chair watching a finger.
Yes. It fundamentally disrupts the neural pattern. And something like the Havening technique does a very similar thing, but it uses soothing, rhythmic touch on the arms and face to create a massive delta wave signal in the brain that directly contradicts the anxiety.
You're basically brute forcing a safety signal into the danger signal.
Brute forcing it, exactly.
That's incredible. And then you have the second bucket of modalities, which seem much more conversational or narrative-based. Things like IFS, which is internal family systems, or the RTM protocol, the rewind technique.
Right. These approaches are definitely more imaginative. Take IFS, for example. You might locate the specific part of your psyche that holds the terror, say it's an inner child part, that is trapped in a specific traumatic memory from your past.
Okay.
And through the therapy, you guide your current capable adult self to enter that exact memory and offer comfort and protection to that younger version of you.
Which, to a skeptic, just sounds like imagining a fake happy ending. But it's actually way more technical biologically, isn't it?
It is entirely technical. If the client is truly associated into the feeling of the original fear, so the memory window is open, and then they vividly introduce this powerful, imaginative experience of compassion and total safety from their adult self,
That's the mismatch
that
there.
is a massive mismatch. You are biologically rewriting the brain's baseline expectation of abandonment or pain. The brain updates the file to say, I am not helpless and alone anymore. I am safely accompanied by my adult self.
So at the end of the day, whether a therapist is using rapid eye movements or facilitating an imaginary conversation with your younger self, the actual engine running under the hood is completely identical.
Yes, it's a very simple formula. Step one, vividly activate the specific target memory. Step two, create a strong mismatch or prediction error experience while it's active. Step three, repeat that until the distress drops to absolute zero.
And if a therapy is doing those three things, it is successfully utilizing memory reconsolidation.
Exactly. But if a therapy is just talking about the problem endlessly without creating a sensory mismatch, or if it's just doing relaxation exercises without first activating the target memory, it is completely missing the rewrite button.
Which brings up a really critical consumer protection point that Matheny hammers home. He is quite critical of the mental health industry at
He
large.
pulls no punches.
He really doesn't. He suggests that millions of people are paying out of pocket for therapy that simply does not have the actual tools to achieve this biological rewrite.
It is a really harsh reality to face. The gap between scientific research and general clinical practice is usually estimated to be anywhere from 15 to 20 years. So you have countless therapists who are trained firmly in the manage and cope era, and they might be wonderful, empathetic people who are very good at validating your feelings.
Right, they help you understand why you react the way you do.
Exactly. They give you great insight. But insight doesn't rewrite the neural code. They just might not have the modalities to clean the mess up.
It's the difference between analysis and synthesis. Knowing exactly why you have a pebble in your shoe does absolutely nothing to get the pebble out.
Could not have said it better. And so, Matheny's big advice for listeners is to become a highly informed consumer of mental health services.
So, what should someone actually ask when they're looking for a therapist?
Don't just ask, do you treat trauma or do you treat anxiety? Because everyone says yes to that. You need to ask very specific questions like, are you utilizing methods based on memory reconsolidation?
Get specific with the terms.
Yes. Ask, do you use EMDR or IFS or the flash technique? Look for practitioners trained in coherence therapy, accelerated resolution therapy, RT, or progressive counting. You want a mechanic who actually owns the software to rewrite the car's computer, not just someone who's going to listen to the engine rattle and tell you it sounds frustrating.
I love that. It fundamentally empowers you as the client to demand an actual result. I feel like society has conditioned us to view therapy as this indefinite, forever process.
Like a gym membership.
Exactly. Like a gym membership for your feelings. You just go every Tuesday for the rest of your life.
And hey, if you're using therapy for general personal growth or having a sounding board, maybe it is an ongoing thing.
Sure.
But if your goal is healing a specific psychological wound, no. Matheny is adamant about this. If the therapy is genuinely working via memory reconsolidation, the change should be rapid.
Rapid.
Yes. We are not talking about peeling back layers of an onion for 7 years. We are talking about seeing profound shifts in a matter of sessions.
That is just such a radical shift in expectations for anyone who feels broken.
It transforms the patient's entire identity. You go from being a chronic sufferer with an incurable disease to just being someone who has a temporary injury that needs resetting.
You know, I want to circle back to the broader implications of this as we wrap up, because if this is true, and Karim Nader's neuroscience strongly proves it profoundly challenges our fundamental concept of
It
identity.
really does.
We so often build our entire identities around our scars. We say things like, I am a survivor of this, or I am a person who struggles with that.
And that is the deepest philosophical point of this entire deep dive.
Yeah.
Because if the emotional pain attached to your history can literally be deleted from your nervous system, then who are you without it?
Right.
You are no longer defined by what happened to you. You're only defined by what you choose to do right now. It returns complete agency back to the individual.
Matheny uses this one phrase that really stuck with me. He says, your brain isn't a prison. It's editable.
It's a beautiful sentiment. The plastic fluid nature of the human brain means that we are absolutely not victims of our own history. We are essentially the editors of it.
But, and I think this is the catch for a lot of people, it requires the courage to actually open the file one last time. To get the cure, you have to be willing to touch the pain.
You do. There's no getting around that. You have
Yeah.
to willingly walk back into the burning building to put the fire out.
You can't just stand outside on the lawn and wish it away with good vibes.
Exactly. But the beautiful promise of reconsolidation is that you don't have to live in the burning building forever. You go in, you deliberately trigger the mismatch, the fire goes out, and you walk out.
And once you walk out, you never have to go back in.
The door is shut, the smoke clears permanently.
So let's wrap this up with a really clear takeaway.
Yeah.
If you are listening to this right now and you have that ball and chain we talked about at the start, a painful memory, an irrational phobia, a deep shame that feels totally permanent, the science says you are simply wrong.
It feels permanent only because it is currently consolidated, but it is definitively not indelible.
Right. Whether it's finding an EMDR specialist, exploring internal family systems, or looking into some of these newer protocols like the Flash Technique or RTM, the actual biological pathway to freedom exists.
Yeah.
Your biology is literally just waiting for you to use it.
Stop settling for lifelong management if a permanent cure is sitting right there on the table. That is the ultimate message.
It is such a hopeful new era for mental health. And, you know, I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over, something that builds on this but really expands it. If our own deeply painful personal memories are this fluid, if we can literally edit the emotional truth of our past, what does that mean for us collectively?
Oh, that's an interesting angle.
Right. Because society holds on to collective trauma too. Generational grudges, societal scars. If the human brain is wired to let go of the past when presented with a profound mismatch of safety and connection, maybe we aren't doomed to repeat our historical cycles either. If your personal history is just a draft document you can edit, maybe our collective future is entirely unwritten, too.
I love that. The baseline is an illusion.
Exactly. Well, we'll put links to Mathety's work and a full breakdown of all those therapy acronyms we threw at you in the show notes so you can do your own research. Thanks for diving in with us.
Take care, everyone.
See you on the next deep dive.